SWAT cars. General Motors and their dealer organization throughout Southern Africa proudly bring you the drama, the danger, the thrills, and the facts when the long arm of the law travels in squad cars. The story you're about to hear is true. Details are supplied from the official case files by the South African police. Only names and places have been changed to protect innocent people involved.
Johannesburg, March the 14th, 4:15 p.m. Car 23 is heading back towards police headquarters from Orange Grove, following a report involving fraud and passing worthless checks. In the car, Captain Martin Lowe of the fraud squad tilts his cap off his forehead and leans back against the seat. A tired sigh escapes his mouth, and he runs the back of his hand wearily across his eyes. The driver, Sergeant Olaf van Heerden, permits a small smile of understanding to flit across his face.
You've had a rough week of it, Captain. What's it? Five new cases this week?
Yeah, five new ones. Another half dozen from the week before. And there'll be more dockets before this month is over. You can bet your pension on that. The way people just ask for trouble, it beats me.
Well, they're too gullible. A con man walks in with a big smile and a hard luck story, and they accept him at face value. Nobody asks about checking credentials or even asking to see the man's identity card. Fantastic.
Take this dress shop we've just been to. Girl comes in, neatly dressed, nice looking. She buys stuff for 16 rands. She asks if she can pay by check. What happens?
The owner's only too glad to get the sale. So he says, sure, the check's fine.
And the girl puts on her best lost look and says, can she make the check out for 20 and will they give her the change? Fine, says the owner, and he gets crafty. Just put your name and address on the back, he says, and she puts down Joan Smith, Barclay Mansions, Hillbrow. The owner gives her the 4 rand, and she walks out with the 16 rands worth of goods. No identity card check. No anything.
No. And then he's surprised when the check bounces.
Not only is the name a phony, but there's not even a Barclay Mansions in Hillbrow. And then I ask him for a description of the girl. He doesn't even know if she's got blonde hair or if she's a brunette, or if her eyes are green or blue. It's marvelous, isn't it, eh?
And in the meantime, the same girl has pulled the same trick at 5 other shops around town, all on the same day.
Nice. She gets all the goods she wants and 20 rand in cash. Lovely.
Control to car 23-23, come in. Over.
Car 23, receiving you, control. Over.
Captain Lowe to report to Colonel Brink's office at once. Confirm message received. Over.
Message received and understood, Control. Over and out. What time do you make it, Sergeant?
4:20, sir.
I'm a couple of minutes fast. Wonder what the Colonel wants. Trouble, that's for sure.
Aren't you supposed to be off this weekend, Captain?
Supposed to, yes, but don't put any money on it. When the Colonel sends out a message like that, you can forget about weekends off.
Car 23 loses no time in returning to divisional headquarters. Less than 10 minutes later, Captain Lowe enters Colonel Brink's office on the 7th floor and is told to take a seat while the Colonel finishes a telephone call. Finally, the receiver replaced, Captain Lowe is handed a sheet of paper with a serrated edge.
That came through on the telex from Australia, Captain. What do you make of it?
Major Frobisher to Colonel Brink. Advise you arrival your country 3 suspect felons on flight 313 this date. Jane Wilson, identity code J4465A. John Arthur Stevens, identity code P76A/492. Denton Frederick Mitchell, identity code C34B/661. Suspected attempt to sell forgeries of master paintings in Perth and Melbourne this month. Our investigations revealed no definite sales. On board same flight, crate of suspect paintings. No known apprehensions in Australia. Ends message. Thoughtful of Major Frobisher to let us know about these 3, Colonel.
Yes, but I'm not exactly happy about them arriving over here. Nobody carts around whole crates of fake paintings unless they intend making money out of them. And I don't like that bit about the Australian investigations revealing... How did he put it again? Yeah, no definite sales. They're up to something, these three. I'd be a lot happier if I knew what it was.
Did you get the Interpol identity files on them, sir?
Telex for them as soon as we received Major Frobisher's message. They should be through any minute now.
I see. What do you want me to do about them, sir?
Flight 313 from Perth arrives at Jan Smuts at 6:30 this evening, Captain. Wilson, Stevens, and Mitchell will be on it. As soon as they set foot in this country, I want them under surveillance, 24 hours a day. You better liaise with the custom boys to point them out to you when they come up for clearance.
No, that won't be any problem, sir. This surveillance, do you want it done discreetly, or should we let them know that we're keeping an eye on them?
Discreetly to start with. Give them enough rope at first. If they're going to try to pull something, they'll need a bit of breathing space. But don't lose them, Captain. Have enough men on standby to follow all three, especially if they split up.
I'll take care of it, sir.
Good. Oh, it's now 5:20. The rush hour traffic will slow you down on the way to the airport. You better get moving right away.
A fact which is seldom appreciated by the public is that police forces throughout the world cooperate fully in sharing information about the movement of known or suspected criminals. Even as Wilson, Stevens, and Mitchell were winging their way towards South Africa, the machinery of international police forces was grinding into motion. The Interpol files yielded information on all three. And even before Flight 313 touched down at Jan Smuts Airport, Captain Lowe had mentally digested the contents of those file cards.
Ons kondig aan die vertrek van vlug nommer 307 na Londen. Sal alle passasiers in besit van sitplekkaartjies asseblief deur uitgang 3 aan boord gaan.
Customs playing ball about pointing them out for us, sir?
All the way, Sergeant. Whichever officer they go to will be getting a signal. He'll pull his earlobe to tip us off. And I think we should be able to recognize them even before they reach the customs. I've got full descriptions of them. Jane Wilson is 32, blonde, 120 pounds, 5'6". Stevens is 41, 6'1", 180 pounds, black hair, worn long, grey eyes. Mitchell is 34, 5'10", 155 pounds. Pronounced scar on his left cheekbone. Light brown hair cut short on the top, long at the back and sides.
What sort of a record have they got?
Well, Stevens is the leader. He's done time in Britain, Sweden and Italy for various fraud dodges. Mitchell's the charm merchant. He handles the selling side. Done time in Britain and Canada. One charge of fraud, one of armed robbery. Jane Wilson has a conviction for embezzlement in Canada. She's Mitchell's girlfriend. They've been together now for the last 5 months. Seems certain they are working some kind of a fiddle. What it is, nobody knows.
Passengers coming through the ramp gate now, sir. Heading for the customs counter.
They're most likely to be together, the three of them. Keep your eyes open, Sergeant.
There. Just coming through the gate now, sir. That blonde carrying the flight bag and the man next to her in the grey suit. Scar on the left side of his face.
Yeah. That's Wilson and Mitchell, all right. Could be Stevens behind them. He's tall enough anyway.
Stevens is hanging back, as though he doesn't even know the other two.
They must think we were all born yesterday. Bet they'd be surprised if they knew we were ready and waiting for them.
Look, the customs officer is tugging at his ear. So that is Stevens. Seems like they'll be keeping up this act of not knowing one another, sir. Shall I warn the men in the cars outside?
Yes, do that, Sergeant. We'll take care of Stevens. Have cars 19 and 41 keep a tail on Mitchell and the woman. And whatever they do, don't lose them.
The three teams of police officers fall smoothly into their well-rehearsed plans of action. Wilson and Mitchell order a taxi to take them to Johannesburg, where they sign the register of the Hotel Assembly as Mr. and Mrs. Denton Mitchell of Sydney, Australia. John Arthur Stevens takes the Airways bus into town and at the rotunda hires a taxi to take him to the same hotel. He checks in as John Stevens of Hobart, Tasmania, and is given a single room on the same floor as Wilson and Mitchell. With the cooperation of the hotel management, the police arrange to have a Bantu constable employed as a cleaner on the same floor. A police car is stationed outside the hotel, and watchers take up their positions to cover both the front and rear entrances. At 8:35 that night, Captain Lowe reports back to Colonel Brink.
Colonel Brink, yeah?
Captain Lowe, sir.
I'm at the hotel assembly. All three suspects have registered here. Wilson and Mitchell as man and wife.
That's not very bright of them. We could use that as a charge to throw them out of the country if we wanted to.
Have you got that in mind, sir?
Not at the moment, Captain. But it might be useful. What else?
Stevens is keeping apart from the others, making out that he's never seen them before.
Mm.
When they went out to dinner, Constable Tempo unlocked their rooms for me, sir. I went through their luggage, but there wasn't anything incriminating in it. Then I found a briefcase shoved on top of the wardrobe in Mitchell's room. It was locked, sir, but I managed to get a look at the contents.
What did you find?
A whole lot of blank share certificates, Colonel. Australian and New Zealand companies. Also a list of names of local businessmen and what I took to be contacts in Joburg.
Did you take down the details of all of them?
I did, sir.
Excellent. Bring them in at once. First, fake paintings, and now blank share certificates. There's something in the wind, all right. Something very crooked. But I'll tell you this right now, Captain. They're not going to get away with it.
March the 15th, 10:30 a.m. Stevens, Mitchell and Wilson remain under close surveillance by the police. Stevens leaves the hotel to check with the airways authorities about the crate of paintings brought over with the same flight from Australia. He instructs the authorities to hold the crate until further notice. Mitchell makes several telephone calls from the hotel, details of which are given to Captain Lowe. Mitchell has made several appointments with local businessmen and is to lunch with a Mr. Charles Grace, whose name had appeared on the list of contacts in his briefcase. Jane Wilson leaves the hotel and calls on two estate agents, making inquiries about furnished flats to rent. She rents a flat in Hillbrow and arranges to move in the following day. In car 23, Captain Lowe contacts radio control.
Car 23 to control. Come in, please. Over.
Control to car 23, we receive you. Over.
We are proceeding north on Twist Street, following suspect Jane Wilson in a taxi, number TJ133644. Looks like she's going straight back to the hotel. Please inform Colonel Brink that suspect has rented flat number 204 in Majestic Heights, Cromwell Street, Hillbrow, and will be moving into that address tomorrow. The flat has a telephone, number 443979. Please arrange a tap on that number as from tomorrow morning. That is all, Control. Over.
Message received. Over and out.
Definitely making for the hotel, Captain. The taxi's turning left up ahead.
Have you noticed Wilson glancing out of the back window?
No, sir. She hasn't moved.
Right. It's unlikely that they know we're onto them. Much better this way.
I just don't understand all this, Captain. These people haven't done anything. Why are we giving them such close attention?
It isn't what they've done that interests us. It's what they think they're going to do. We sent Australia details of those share certificates, and they'll be checking up on them for us. But you can lay odds that at least some of them will be fakes. We don't know yet how they intend disposing of the shares, but it's dollars to donuts they'll try something.
And the paintings in that crate, the airway, sir? What's all that about?
I'm not sure. But we had the crate open just after Stevens had been down there, and we've listed the contents. They're the same fakes as the gang had in Australia. Impressionists and a few of the modern Spanish school. Fela Casas, Clave, Goodyear, people like that. The newer paintings may be genuine, but not the Impressionists. Pizarro, Monet, and even a Degas or two. These are all hanging in galleries or private collections all over the world.
But the Australians are sure they are fakes.
Yes, but we've sent cables to the various galleries and museums to check up on them for us.
There. The taxi's dropped Wilson at the hotel now.
All right. Drop me around the corner. I'll check up with the other squads, see if Mitchell or Stevens have left yet. You stay in the car. If Colonel Brink wants me, let me know about it immediately.
March the 16th, 11:42 a.m. Mitchell and Wilson check out of their hotel and move into the flat in Hillbrow, not knowing that the telephone has been tapped. Mitchell again makes appointments with various Johannesburg businessmen, and again he's followed wherever he goes. Jane Wilson leaves the flat and takes a taxi to a department store. Captain Lowe and Sergeant Van Heerden, both in plain clothes, are accompanied by Bantu Sergeant William Molefe, dressed in the uniform of a Bantu chauffeur. and they follow Wilson to the hardware department. Her purchases are to be expected. Frying pans, cutlery and crockery for the flat.
Will that be all then, madam?
Yes, I think so. You've got the knives and forks in that parcel, have you?
Everything that's on the cash slip, madam. Do you want me to check it over for you?
No, that's all right, thanks. How much is it?
£14.75, madam.
Is that right? I'm not used to South African money yet.
£15. 25 cents change. There you are.
Thank you. Oh, dear, I don't know how I'll manage all these parcels. Can I leave some here and come back for them?
Yes, of course. I'll keep an eye.
No need for that, ma'am. I've got my driver here. He'll carry them for you.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind of you.
Oh, not at all. My pleasure. William.
Yes, sir.
Take these parcels for the madam, please. Have you got a car outside?
No, that taxi that's double parked out there. I asked him to wait for me.
Just these parcels, madam.
Yes, thank you. Just those. Thanks again. I don't know how I would have managed.
Oh, don't mention it. Glad to oblige.
Cheerio, then.
Good morning, ma'am.
You handled that pretty smoothly, sir. But what's the idea of getting Sergeant Malefa to help her?
The closer we get to them, the more chance we have of picking up something useful. Yeah. And Malefa's a good man.
He's smart, all right. And quite an actor. Look at the way he's tipping his cap to her and putting on the chance mark.
Yes. And getting a tip for it. Never misses an opportunity to make a couple of bob, does he?
That's funny. He's talking to her. What do you suppose he's going on about?
Blessed if I know. Now he's frowning as though he's moaning about something. I wish we could hear what he's saying.
Well, now she's getting into the taxi. He'll be able to overhear what address she gives the driver. That'll save us having to guess where she's going after this.
Go on, let's see what Malefi was going on about out there.
He's grinning like an ape. Something's killing him.
Well, Sergeant, what was all that about, eh?
I was just telling the madam, sir, that I was not very happy working as your driver.
You what?
I said you were too cheeky to work for, sir. And couldn't the madam please give me another job?
I'll be blown. What did she say to that?
Starting tomorrow morning, sir, I am working as a flat boy.
With Sergeant Molefi in the flat with Wilson and Mitchell, the surveillance of the suspected trio was as comprehensive as could be arranged. Mitchell continued to arrange his business appointments, and each of them was carefully noted by the watching police. The days clicked by, and not for a single instant were Stevens, Mitchell, and Wilson free from observation of one kind or another. Sergeant Molefe, in the customary khaki cleaner's uniform, padded silently around the flat, making himself as inconspicuous as possible. Keeping his face blank and free from any telltale expression of interest, he had no difficulty whatsoever in picking up important snatches of conversation between Mitchell and Wilson.
Hey, Janie! I'm home! Where are you?
In the kitchen, Dad. Come through!
I think we've got ourselves a sucker.
Who? Who did you see today?
Guy called Malcolm Thomas. He's a big wheel in one of the gold mining concerns, but he's the sort of bloke who's always on the lookout for turning something crook to his advantage. Now, I dangled some of the Kalgoorlie franchise company bait, and he just about snapped at it.
Have you brought in John's name yet?
Oh, just casually. I mentioned that one of the company directors was in town, and Thomas could find out more about the company from him. He poo-pooed the suggestion. Said he only did business with people he could trust. But you can bet your bottom dollar that he's already been in contact with John.
And Charles Grace. Has he come to light?
Sure has. Just casually passed the word to Thomas that he might be able to lay his hands on a genuine Degas. One that had been lifted from a private collection in France. He said Thomas would pay almost any price for something like that.
Lovely. If we can make a quick killing here, it'll bankroll us for a bigger play on the Riviera. When do you see Thomas again?
Day after tomorrow. 2 days, baby, and we'll be rolling in the lolly.
March the 16th, 3:40 p.m. In the communications room at police headquarters, Johannesburg, an overseas telex machine stutters into life. Standing waiting expectantly are Colonel Brink and Captain Lowe. They watch the words appearing, and a smile flickers over Captain Lowe's face.
In the reply, your questions are repaintings in possession, galleries, or private ownership.
We advise 3 or 4 Degas originals stolen during 6 month period, January to June last year, all untraced. 1 Monet stolen private home in United States during same period. No information concerning Pizarro as yet. Inquiries continuing. Message ends.
Well, 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 Captain. And what do you make of that kettle of fish?
Well, I'm not surprised, Colonel. In fact, I rather suspected something like that.
Mm-hmm. Did you indeed? Why?
The Australian authorities confirmed that all the paintings were forgeries. And that was expert testimony. But if that was so, they would only have a selling value if the buyer believed they were originals and that they'd been stolen from the galleries concerned.
Yes, good thinking. All these people had to do was to make sure they faked paintings that had, in fact, been stolen. Then the buyer would believe he was getting a masterpiece, and he wouldn't be likely to boast about it afterwards.
Exactly like that, sir. Oh, by the way, we had word from Melbourne about those Australian and New Zealand companies. All the share certificates are genuine, except for the Kalgoorlie Franchise Company. The real certificates are used as bait to lure on a prospective buyer, who then finds himself saddled with shares in a company that doesn't exist. Very clever, Mr. Mitchell.
Now, hold on. Here's something else coming through from London. Let's see. Add to painting trio. Now, that's interesting, Captain. Yeah, very interesting indeed.
March the 16th, 5:41 p.m. At the flat in Majestic Heights in Hillbrow, Jane Spencer and Denton Miller are in exuberant spirits as they finish dressing for a night on the town.
Baby, we've got it made.
Are the fish biting?
Biting like they want hook, line, and sinker for dinner. Charlie Grace says he's been phoned twice this afternoon already, and Malcolm Thomas wants to know if the Kalgoorlie Franchise Company is reliable. Then just as a casual afterthought, Thomas asked Charlie to get him a quote on the Degas painting. Do you think friend Thomas has a mild smell of larceny about him?
Mild? He'd stand out even in a fish market.
Hey, you expecting anyone?
No. Only Johnny knows we're here.
Oh. Well, it must be him, then. Now, what's he calling around here for?
Easy way to find out. Answer the door.
Bright she is.
Good afternoon, sir. Mr. Denton Miller, isn't it?
Miller? Why, no, my name's Mitchell. But what is this? Who are you?
My name's Brunk. Colonel Brunk, South African Police. We have reason to believe that you're traveling under an invalid passport and that your real name is Miller.
Oh, this is ridiculous. You've got no right to barge in like this. I demand to see your identification.
Certainly, sir. This is my appointment card with photograph.
Oh. Now, look, Colonel, I'm sure we can straighten this out. There's just some misunderstanding. Somebody made a mistake.
That's right, Mr. Miller. You did. Captain Lowe.
Sir,
I believe you have something for Mr. Miller.
Yes, sir. For you, Mr. Miller, I think you'll find these are in order.
Well, what the devil is this?
Deportation orders for you and Jane Spencer. Or perhaps you know her as Jane Stevens.
Now, wait a minute.
We'll wait longer than a minute, Mr. Miller. Just as long as it takes you to get packed.
Now?
Now.
You don't waste any time, do you, Colonel? We get the full red carpet treatment. Personal escort all the way out here. I suppose you've arranged something similar for Johnny Wilson.
John Arthur Salvero, yes. He should be on his way here now, like you, well escorted. All of you will be on the next flight heading for London.
London? What good will that do you? We're not wanted in Britain.
No, I know you're not. But we received a telex about you people, and it seems that all three of you are wanted in Canada. The Canadian police hold warrants for your arrest on charges of fraud and embezzlement.
So? We're going to London, not Canada.
Think so? The British Customs will be waiting for you when you land. They're not going to accept your phony passports. Know what they're going to do? Shove you right back on the plane. And you know where the flight's final destination is. That's right, Mr. Miller. Montreal, Canada.
Waiting at Montreal National Airport was a reception committee of Canadian police armed with 3 warrants of arrest. When the London flight landed, Spencer, Miller, and Solvero were immediately arrested. Less than 2 weeks later, they all faced trial on charges of fraud and uttering. All 3 were convicted and sentenced to varying terms of imprisonment.
They prowl the empty streets at night, waiting, in fast cars, on foot, living with crime and violence. These men are on duty 24 hours out of every 24. They face dangers at every turn, expecting nothing less. They protect the people of South Africa. These are the men of Squad Cars. Listen again next Friday evening to another authentic story in our dramatic South African police series, Squad Cars, brought to you by General Motors, makers of the biggest and most exciting range of cars, trucks, and commercial vehicles in the world. Cadillac, Buick, Oldsmobile, Pontiac, Beaumont, Chevrolet, Opel, Holden, Vauxhall, Bedford, GMC, and Ranger, South Africa's own car.